Welcome back to Tall Boy Radio, episode 162. And if you recognise the voice, it's me, it's Dan. I'm in the driving seat tonight. I haven't said that for a while. So looking forward to this episode. And before we crack on with the main body of what we're going to talk about today, I'm just going to introduce our two co-hosts. So the first co-host is going to say hi and let us know what your thoughts are.
Yeah, interesting one, this one. Like you say, it's been a little bit of a while since I've been on the other side of the fence. So I'm really looking forward to it. I'm really looking forward to see where this episode goes.
And Dave?
Yeah, welcome everyone. It's looking forward to it as well. I think it could be a bit of an argumentative one, maybe. Some different opinions going into it.
Yeah, without giving too much away, we've got no guest tonight. It would have been great if Andy had joined us. Not available, unfortunately. We're going to see him soon. He's definitely going to be back soon. Just can't guarantee when. Adam is nodding here if you're watching us on YouTube. So looking forward to this. This one is all about whether or not, and I'm going to open up with a question, and it's on the back of one of my football teams. My football team is Everton. I'm an Everton fan, and we sacked our manager, Frank Lampard, and we employed Sean Dyche. So my question, I suppose, is should a club get rid of managers halfway through a season? So should there be sackings halfway through a season? To me, from doing a little bit of research, it's almost one of the only sports where it actually happens. Because you, for listeners out there, you know, they know that myself and Adam are big American football fans and big American sports fans, and it never happens. In the NFL, in lots of American sports, they don't sack coaches or managers halfway through the season. So I suppose I'm going to just throw it out there, see what the lads think. There's obviously one or two stats in terms of managerial casualties, this, that and the other, but just throwing it out there, question number one, should a club get rid of a manager pre-season? I'll just throw it out there. Dave, what are your thoughts? Don't know who wants to go first.
Pre-season?
Mid-season, sorry, not pre-season, mid-season.
Okay. Yeah, mid-season's a funny one. I kind of get sometimes the logic behind it, because we've seen those clubs, and there are clubs out there that change their manager more often than they change their bloody socks. And quite often, when a new manager comes in, there's a new line of thinking, there's a new way of doing things, and it gets a result relatively quickly. If you look at Sean Dyche coming in, say, at Everton, so he's done things slightly different. So you'd see pictures of your Everton players on social media in the snoods and the hats while they're training. And Sean Dyche, that didn't sit too well with him, did it? God bless him. And he was literally, you're wearing your shin pads, you're losing your hats, you're not wearing your snoods because you're not going to have them on Saturday, so you're not going to have them today. And straight away,
you train as you play.
Yeah, and straight away, you got results, you know, sticks in the back of the throat a little bit. Was it Arsenal? Was it one of the first games? So you beat us 1-0?
Arsenal was the first game, and we won 1-0. We then played Liverpool, and we got, obviously, local derby. We got beat 2-0. We played okay. We hit the post, and then Liverpool went up the other end and scored. And then our third game, we won 1-0. So we've picked up, basically, 6 points out of his first three games. Dave, what are your thoughts then? Should a club sack a manager halfway through a season?
I think it's sometimes inevitable if that club is on a downward run of results and they're losing game after game after game, and the available games left in the season is getting smaller and smaller. It must be very, very difficult to have the courage to stick with that manager, particularly the higher up in the leagues. If you're in the Premiership, the difference between fourth from bottom and third from bottom is just absolutely massive. It can literally lead the club into oblivion. There's been clubs that have just got relegated, and some have gone bankrupt. So it's you know, it could be the end of the club. That's, you know, not going to happen in almost every case, but that is the worst case scenario. And if you're on that downward spiral and you're not winning games, it's not going to get any easier without a change.
So what's the difference then? And I know, Dave, I'm assuming you're aware of American sports, but you don't follow it perhaps as closely as myself and Adam. What's the difference then between Premiership football and the NFL? Because my team in the NFL is the Chicago Bears, and I think, you know, obviously we were on a downward spiral. I think we won, was it three games out of whatever it was this last year, four games maybe. We were horrendous, and we were on a downward spiral, and they don't get rid of their coaches halfway through the season. So what is it about the Premiership, the Premier League, football, soccer for our American visitors that makes it that's the case?
I don't really follow American football at all, but and I might get this wrong, but you can't get relegated. And the worst you do, the easier it is next season because you get first picks of the better players. Is that roughly it?
Yeah. That's a bad point. Yeah. So Ad, I mean, and you might be able to answer the question. So in terms of America and soccer, do soccer coaches get sacked halfway through the season?
Interestingly enough, I don't know the answer to that question. I'd be intrigued to know. I'm willing to bet. But if Dave's right in terms of his thinking as to why they don't part ways with a coach halfway through a season, then, you know, there's no relegation in the MLS either. So maybe maybe that's the case. I also think the NFL is fairly unique in terms of American sports, in terms of the amount of games that are actually played. You know, if you're just going to play your regular season games, you've only got 17 games that you're going to be taking part in. And if you're going to bring a new coaching, it's a whole new coaching regime. They do things entirely different. They want to do things their own way. It's a whole new franchise almost when you bring a new manager.
But is that not the same? Is that not the same in the Premier League? A new manager comes in, new philosophy, new way of playing.
It is. But when you think about that, when you think about what they have on their wrist and they have the list of the tactics that they're going to employ, all that is going to change. It takes a while to get embedded. So they know, say, for example, Chicago Bears think enough's enough, three games, just not good enough. You know, well, let's try and finish above the Detroit Lions. Lions. Yeah. You know, and let's face it, they weren't even close to that. God bless them. They knocked in seven wins last year unpredictably, didn't they?
Yeah, right. Yeah, unpredictably, yeah.
Yeah, but the challenge there is to change everything is almost to scrap it all and begin again. Now, you can do that a little bit in the Premiership because you've got players who play a certain way. They've been bought in because they fit a certain way that the team likes to play. In terms of how tactical the NFL is and the way that it's set up, and all the different plays you can play, I don't know if it's necessarily as feasible as it is. I'd be interested to know if anybody's ever done it and how it panned out.
Yeah.
How many teams are there in the NFL?
Well, there are 32.
You say they play 17 games. So I have no idea. Why don't you play at least 31 games?
So what happens, Dave, is that the NFL is split into various conferences. They have the NFC East, South and stuff. But basically, each conference has 4-5 teams in it. And what you do is you play each of those teams home and away. And then randomly, on a rotational basis, you then play another random 8 or 9 teams. So, for example, my team, Chicago Bears, and Adam's team, Pittsburgh Steelers, we're not scheduled to play every year. So we only play once every however many years it is. But we'll play the Detroit Lions home and away, the Minnesota Vikings home and away, and the Green Bay Packers home and away, because they're the teams in our conference. And that's how it works. It's a bit like, I suppose, the northwest of England. You'd have Man United, Man City, Everton, Liverpool, and you play City home and away, United home and away, Liverpool home and away, and then you play a random selection of all the other teams. That's how it works.
How far into the season can it be before you can't then get to the Super Bowl? I mean, is it a bit like if you're in the top six or something, you can play playoffs or something like that?
Yeah. So each of the winning team, each of the conference winning sides, go through to what's called the playoffs, and then you get like the best of the rest of those. That's a bit like the Europa Cup, I suppose. It's like the next best couple of teams, and then they play, and then you get your divisional champ games, and then you get your conference games, and then you get your Super Bowl. So I suppose maybe 3 or 4 games into the season, you've got a pretty good idea that you are or you're not going to make the playoffs. If you lose your first 4 games, it's pretty much game over. You're probably not going to make it. So why not change the coach then? I don't know. It's weird. And I do wonder whether or not, is it the financial aspect of it? So, you know, as you said, Dave, if you finish fourth and bottom in the Premier League, that's probably 20, 30, 40 million pound more than if you finish third from bottom and you go down. Do you know what I mean? So is it the financial thing? Because the Bears finished bottom of their conference, and I don't know whether or not they get prize money and stuff, but it doesn't really matter to them whether they finish bottom or second from bottom or third from bottom. Whereas in the Premier League, the financial impact is huge. So is that a contributory factor?
I think it's probably the main factor. Because if it wasn't financial, then what's your opportunity? You can still enter the FA Cup. You can still enter the League Cup. You can't qualify for Europe.
No.
Although, do you get into the Europa if you win the FA Cup? Is that something they tried, or can you do that? Yeah, now?
I think they try. I think it depends on who's in the top four, and if one of the top four teams wins the FA Cup, does it then go to the FA? Anyway, I think
if it wasn't money that was an issue, it wouldn't really be a massive problem to get relegated, because money's not an issue. So you'd have perhaps less people watching the game, less TV money, but if money wasn't an issue, it wouldn't matter. So it has to be purely money and the panic of the implications of that.
So, okay, so we're obviously football fans. Who's the longest serving Premier League manager?
Arsene Wenger.
Currently?
Oh, currently, probably Jurgen Klopp.
Dave?
I have no idea.
Ad, give yourself a little tick.
Whoa!
Come on, dude. Get the soundboard.
Yeah. What's he about? Four and a half years?
When was he appointed then?
I guessed at 4.5 years. But
I'd say 5 years. 5 to 6.
2015.
Eight years this year, End of the season.
And actually, ironically, and there's a reason I asked the question, obviously Everton are now managed by Sean Dyche, but he was the longest serving prior to Klopp, because he was manager of Burnley for years and years and years. But obviously he then got sacked from Burnley, and now he's manager of Everton, and now it becomes Klopp. So he's been in place from 2015, and don't get me wrong, I'm an Everton fan, but he has done quite a good job for Liverpool, sort of thing, steady the ship and all that. But they talk about this manager, the new manager comes in, they talk about the bounce effect, the new manager bounce. Is that a thing? Is it not a thing? Do results improve? I don't know.
It's normally a thing. It's normally a thing. You see a reaction. And sometimes, and you've seen those clubs where players just aren't playing for the previous manager. They don't like what he's doing. And they're almost playing, so he gets the sack, so the new guy comes in, and that's it. They kick it off.
You think that happens, dude? As a professional footballer, you don't play to the best of your ability because you want the manager to be sacked.
I don't know if it's they don't play to the best of their ability, but they certainly don't. If they're playing out on the wing and they want to be playing up front, there's those egos out there. Yeah, I do. I do think it happens.
So that's they're not playing to their best ability then? You can't be both ways. They might just drift in and out the game. Well, if they're drifting out the game and they could influence the game,
I'm not saying it's intentional necessarily, though. I'm just saying they're pissed off.
They're pissed off.
Psychologically, they're not in the right headspace to be playing in the way that they're playing. And they'll end up going, they bring the new guy in, and he says, do you know what? I think your best position is up front. That's what I've been telling the last guy. You know what I mean? They took him in and he has a great performance, because headspace, it's a big part of the game. The mental part of the game is a huge part of the game. You know the players out there that need to play on that winning streak. So when they're in form, it's fantastic. All of a sudden the form dips and they don't know how to get back up there. It just takes something lucky to happen for them. And like I say, the mental side of the game is really, really important. And I'm not suggesting they do it to get the manager necessarily sacked. Don't get me wrong, I'm sure it's happened. You know, I remember when Souness was at Liverpool, he wasn't very popular. There's a lot of people there who were perpetually injured, and all of a sudden, once Souness is gone, they're all available.
What are your thoughts then? So the managerial bounce, is that a thing? Is it not a thing?
Well, have you got the stats to give us the definitive answer?
I have, but I'm just curious as to what you think.
I reckon over the first probably two games of a new manager, more often than not, there's probably 3 or 4 points out of the six where they've just come off the back of a series of defeats. That would be my gut feeling without having the stats.
Okay.
But Adam, just to follow up on Adam, the mental side of it, there's players that, you know, they a lot of them have their own psychologists, and it's mental all the time to keep at the peak of their game. And that only happens, I'm sure, with a lot of players. If they're performing well, the team is performing well, or they totally believe in what the manager's trying to do. Now, if the board is looking at sacking the manager, you can be sure that the team isn't playing well. So the individual may still be playing well and still being happy. If they're not, they're then looking at the manager. And if they don't have 100% confidence in what that manager is trying to do and the way he's trying to do it, then that's where they've lost lost the locker room, isn't it? That's where the phrase comes from. They don't, your players don't believe because the results aren't there. They don't believe.
Dressing room,
not locker room. Wrong sport. Look at that, isn't it?
Well, America's for you. You say you know anything about it exactly. I look at you.
So I would say the bounce is an effect because it gives people the chance, the hope at least that things are going to be different, and that will motivate them at least for a game or two.
Okay, Ad, what are you similar? Is that what you think?
I believe there'll be a 17% uptake in points.
After doing not doing your research,
and that's made up. Like you know, like Vic Reeves always says, 96% of statistics are made up on the spot.
There's lies, damn lies, and statistics, as Mark Twain once famously said. So yeah, so obviously, you know, there's a reason that I've asked these questions. There's a reason that I'm doing this podcast is I'm an Everton fan. We've recently changed our manager. Has there been an uplift? Yes, arguably we've won two of our previous three games, but from the 2017-2018 season, there were 26 Premier League managerial casualties, which actually doesn't sound that much. And of those 26 managerial casualties in the last 5 years, basically, which sound that much. Yeah. Now, this season has been... Okay, so how many have lost their job this year?
Seven.
Southampton. He's just lost his job only recently.
Yeah.
Chelsea, did they go this year?
Yeah.
Well, I'd say four, five.
Dave?
Right, I'll go into seven, but it's just a complete guess.
Okay, there's 10.
Oh, wow.
So Everton obviously lost theirs, didn't they?
Oh, come on, Dave. Yeah.
So, you know, obviously Southampton. And I haven't got the list of Villa yet. So Chelsea, Villa, Everton, Southampton, you know, there's a list, but there's basically 10. But basically, out of the last 26 managerial changes, 20 of those changes experienced more points in their following five games in the preceding five games. So I suppose the bounce effect is sort of there. I've got a couple of other, and there was a study done, and it basically took the Premier League over the last however many years, and it looked at the last 149 managerial appointments. Now, across like a significant time span, and they looked at the new manager's new manager's first six games. So basically, there's 18 points available. So obviously, 3 points per win, six games, 18 points. Out of 18 available points, what would be the average number of points that a new manager would gain out of 18?
10.
I'm going to go 11.
Okay. 7.3. Mm-hmm. So out of your first six games, basically you get two wins and a draw, and that's about your lot.
Wow.
But it must be better than the previous six games. You don't tend to sack a manager if he's got two wins and a draw in six games.
Yes. Now interesting, what they've said is that those points are actually significantly more than the last six games of the predecessor. So whilst you might only get 7.3 points on average in terms of the next six games, compared to your previous six, that's actually significantly better.
And do we think this boardroom sitting there going, look, this is stats, this happens, you know, more often than not, we're sacking it manager, works. We'll get the points.
However, depending on where you are in the league, it depends on... So obviously Chelsea, Liverpool, and not Liverpool have for a while, but Chelsea, Arsenal, whatever, if they sat their manager, they're more likely to pick up more points than Bournemouth, Southampton, whoever, because they're towards the bottom. So therefore, the teams that change their manager at the top, i.e. Chelsea, and I know that Graham Potter's not having a great time at the moment, but he's more likely statistically to pick up more points than somebody like a Nathan Jones who takes over from Southampton, who's dire and has actually lost his job. Mm. So, relatively speaking, in the league, there's obviously a difference. So, I didn't know this, and I'd be amazed if you got it unless you've done any research. Ad, and I'm looking at you in particular. Out of the six games, so basically a new manager comes in and they take into account their first six games. So there's 18 points available. Who's the manager that's seen the biggest bounce? Who's the manager that's won the most points out of his first six games?
No, that's interesting. If I'm honest, I don't know. I have not done that research. But were I to take a stab in the dark, I would say there's a reason why they call him the special one. Would it be Mr. Mourinho by any chance?
It isn't, but he's very close to it, dude. That's a good shout. He's very close to it. Dave, have you got any ideas? I didn't know.
Oh, well, I'd just go for Big Sam because he's had that many goes at it.
Well, actually, it's neither of those two. And it's you both of you will go, who? But you'll probably reckon Tim Sherwood when he took over Spurs.
Really?
Yep. In his first six games, he had 5 wins and a draw. So he picked up 16 out of 18 points.
Probably still didn't win a trophy though, did he?
I knew you'd say that's a North London rival. But interestingly, now, and I know there's loads of United fans out there, and they'll go, oh, Solskjaer. Solskjaer was only interim manager, and he won his first 5 games, so he won loads, but he was only interim manager. So there's a little bit of a fact check there. It doesn't include interim managers. And Solskjaer took over on an interim basis and then went on and won, like, 6 of his first 7 or 8 or whatever it was. But in terms of when you're actually appointed as a manager, it's actually Tim Sherwood who I say, 5 wins and a draw, so 16 out of 18 points. And he's a guy with the most bounce effect.
Wow.
How many managers win their first game? So new manager comes in, what percentage of managers win out of those 149 managerial appointments? What percentage win their first game?
Oh, dude, that's an interesting one. Bearing in mind, we tend to see a improvement. I want to say it's north of 50%, but I don't think it's going to be. I'm going to go 39%.
Okay.
I'll go the other way then, just in the interest of being different, and I'll go 59.
Okay. 34%.
Oh, that's not bad. That's not bad.
37.6. There we go. So 34% of managers, only 34% win their first game. And actually, if you look at the stats, 39% lost their first game. So obviously, it's quite tight. You're looking at 34, 39, whatever the rest is, like 28 or whatever it's for a draw. But there's more percentage of managers, new managers, that lose their first game than win their first game. So then you think about, oh, okay, so the managerial bounce effect doesn't actually happen in the first game because statistically more people lose their first game than win their first game. So you're looking at a streak of games then. So over the first 5, 6 games, 18 points available. But if the average is only 7.3, that means you lose more games than you win. Because if you're to win 3 games out of your first 6, that's 9 points. Managerial bounce means if you take into account the last 149 appointments, the managerial bounce, it means you lose or you're not winning more than 50% of your game. So is there a bounce?
Yeah, but if you've got to win in 4 draws.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, if you take into account what you said earlier, Dave, in terms of what you have to take into account your predecessor's results as well. So your predecessor might have gone lose, 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 win, lose, lose. All of a sudden, because they've got 3 points, all of a sudden, if you go win, win, lose, win, draw, lose, you've got 7.3. Like, wow, I've more than doubled what that guy did. Do you know what I mean? So just interesting in terms of the bounce and what boards might feel, because there is that perception of that managerial bounce. Oh, just while you're, and I mentioned Solskjaer earlier, who's the guy who, how many managers go on a winning streak? So how many managers win their first 2, their first 3? What's the streak of wins? Has anybody won all 6?
I don't know. I'd like to think Wenger did pretty well when he came in. I don't think he won all 6, though. I think we had a draw or so in there.
Yeah. He didn't win all 6.
No. Didn't he just say Tim Sherwood won 5 out of 6 and that was the best?
Yeah, so Tim Sherwood won 5 and drew 1. So he's 16th. He's the best in terms of the first 6. So he's the best in terms of the first 6. Gerard Houllier at Liverpool, he won his first four games, but then obviously Tim Shaw didn't win his first. So I think he went Tim Shaw win, win, draw, win, win, lose or something. But he said, but Julio won his first four, and that's the longest streak that there is. So I'm going to pose then, you know, if you're sitting on a board, you know, Dave, Ad, your board of directors, you think, right, okay, our manager isn't doing very well. Do we change? Do we not change? Yes, arguably so. Should there be a manager transfer window? Should teams be forced to finish the season with the manager they started with?
That's a good concept. Really like that concept. Because I always think this with Premier League managers or football managers in general, it really is a merry-go-round in terms of, if you think about it during your own careers, if you got sacked as regularly as some of these managers tend to, gee whiz, you know, you'd be looking over your shoulder every 5 seconds. Yeah. And how effectively can you do your job if you're always in the fear of, if I lose the next three games, the crowd are already chanting that they want me out, I'm gone. Because they know the board are going to listen to these guys chanting. Yeah. But if it got to the point where actually they couldn't, you are stuck with this guy, unless there was some exceptional circumstances.
Maybe exceptional personal circumstances or whatever.
Yeah. We're stuck with this guy until the end of the season. Then it would stop a lot of that nonsense. I'd be for that, dude. And don't get me wrong, when we look at the teams I support, Arsenal, you know, we don't change our manager too regularly, you know, not without real sort of planning and forethought. And then the Pittsburgh Steelers, you know, we well know, everybody knows, you know, three coaches in the Super Bowl era. That's all we've ever had since 1969. It's an absolutely incredible statistic.
Yeah. So I think it makes the board do their due diligence. It stops this merry-go-round. It means that, you know, so therefore do we only ever offer managers 1 year contracts? And it's a 1 year rolling contract.
I think, just coming back to your previous point, I think theoretically it sounds great, but it just couldn't work, because if the manager's going to stick at his job, even if he's doing crap and he's getting grief everywhere, there'll come a point where his own mental health and his own self-respect, if he's failing, he's going to quit. So you'll get that change of manager. So you'd have to build in some kind of financial penalty or points penalty or something pretty severe if you lose your manager for whatever reason. But then you're into, well, what if it's a genuine illness? And then you're into grey areas of what is and isn't. And mental health, of course, is a genuine illness. So if that's the reason that the person leaves. So theoretically, I think it'd be brilliant, but it'd be very, very difficult to implement in a way that could be upheld with a simple set of rules.
You say that, though, but you look at it's the same for players. You look at the likes of Aubameyang and his time at Arsenal. He was absolutely atrocious towards the end of while he was playing. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying he wasn't doing his best, but it just wasn't happening for him for whatever reason, whether it was mentally or physically. But he was stuck there at that club until we sold him or found somewhere else for him.
He went to Barcelona, didn't really work out there. He's then gone to Chelsea, but arguably it's not really working out there either.
No, it's not working out there.
Is he just... And Pierre, if you're listening, I apologise, but are you just a bad egg?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? He's just a bad egg, because he went to Arsenal. And he went to Barcelona. He's now at Chelsea. So there are three managers. So you look at, you know, he was at Arsenal. So Arteta, is Xavi at Barcelona, and then you know Graham Potter at Chelsea. So you're thinking there's probably three guys that sort of know what they're doing, and he doesn't fit in. So is he a bit of a bad egg? But should that happen from a manager's point of view? Should we say, you know what, if you start with him, you finish with him? I like that. I like that concept.
Yeah, I like that concept.
I do. So, and there's part of me that thinks, I know what Dave's saying, and don't get me wrong, mental health is important. I totally understand where he's coming from. However, you know that you're going to undertake that contract, say, for at least 12 months. You start out in the August time. You know, for whatever reason, you have to be there till May. If you think that there's a chance that things ain't going to go your way, or you don't feel mentally prepared for it, I don't think you take that contract on. There are going to be circumstances where it ain't going to pan out for you for whatever reason. But I do think if the supporters know that you're stuck with them till the following May, they're more likely to get on board. Like, look, we've got this guy. Let's get behind him.
And that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I think the fans will turn around and go, you know, rather than boo, you know, sack him and you're getting sacked in the morning. Well, there'll be none of that because you're not getting sacked in the morning because you've got until April or whenever it is.
And I guess they have the wider team, don't they? They always take their you know, assistant manager and lead coaches with them. So the same as if I was to go off work for, you know, 3 months or whatever, that they wouldn't ship in an immediate replacement. You know, the company still functions, things still get done. And they just have to say, well, if you, as the number one, decides you can't do this job, then the rest of your
go
team,
to number two.
Whatever coaches are already employed, have got to carry on. The staff that you had at the start of the season have got to be responsible.
Yeah, and maybe you might promote from within, maybe in the under, I don't know, the under 19 becomes the under 21 coach, and the under 21 coach becomes senior coach, and a senior coach becomes assistant manager, and assistant manager becomes manager, whatever. And you have to do it within your team, because I think it stops the quick fix. You know, oh, we're gonna bring in, it's not working, we're gonna bring in this person, and then we're gonna give him a 6 month contract. I'll say Sam Allardyce. I'm not a huge Sam Allardyce fan. Obviously, he's managed my club. You know, so you bring him in, he firefights, he saves you from relegation, and then 6 months later, he's gone. Now, don't get me wrong, financially, yeah, he saved you from relegation, but there's no long term, there's no planning, there's no this or that. So I like the idea. I like the idea of not a manager transfer window, but, you know, if you start the season and come that first season, and don't get me wrong, there might be merry-go-round the month before, but then you have to get the board in place to plan, because you can't change a manager a week before the season because you've had no pre-season. So therefore, you've got to get you've got to line your ducks up in a row. You've got to think, well, we've got to give them a pre-season, we've got to give them a transfer budget. And all of a sudden, I just think the planning becomes just that little bit easier. Because if you give somebody, start of the season, 100 million, let's say, I don't know what the average Premier League spend is, 100 million, 150 million, whatever it may be. And then come Christmas, you think, oh, shit, I think we made a bit of an error. We're going to get somebody else in. But come the January transfer window, he's going to turn around, well, I want 150 million to spend on my type of players because I've got all these players that I don't really want and I don't like and they don't fit in my way of playing. I want my guys in. So all of a sudden, you're thinking, well, I've spent 300 million. Now we've only budgeted for 150 and now I've spent 300 million, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I like the idea. I was trying to think, is there another sport where coaches or managers get the kibosh halfway through the season? And I genuinely don't think there is.
No, there's none that spring to mind. Like I say, the American sports, specifically American football, never really see it.
You know, basketball, you don't either, really, do you?
No.
Basketball, you don't. Baseball, you don't. And it might go back to what Dave said. And I think there's a lot into what Dave said in terms of, well, there's no relegation, so there's no threat of financial ruin as such. And if you go down from the Premiership and get relegated from the Premiership or the Championship or whatever level you're at, there's a financial implication. But I don't know. I think, personally, I like the idea of a manager transfer window and it's pre-season. And I like the idea if you start with a manager, you've got to finish with a manager and cards on the table, you will be where you'll be. The players understand where they are. Well, I don't really like the guy, but I've got him for the next 12 months, and I'm going to have to play for him, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know. I just think there's too many pros for that as opposed to cons.
Here's a question. And it's not necessarily related to what we're talking about, but it is related to relegation. So we accept it. It's part of the game. You want to avoid it. I'm an Arsenal fan. Never happened to us. I'm not going to complain too much about that. However, when you look at American sports, there's a little bit of us, let's be honest, looks down our nose in terms of they haven't got that threat over them. You know what I mean? The worst you can have is a season, and I'm not having a dig here when
like
I say
Bears.
Like the Bears, where, okay, you've won three games, you finished bottom of your conference, but guess what? You get you were that bad. You had the worst record in the whole of the NFL. Well, guess what? You get the first pick in the next season's draft. However, even if you don't choose to take that, you can use to trade that to bring in an absolute quality player because people know the worth of that first draft. Have they got it right or have we got it right? Which do you reckon?
Yeah, I like the idea of a draft system. But in football, Americans call soccer, In football, it doesn't work because you have various pyramids. So you've got Premiership, Championship, Div 1, Div 2. So if out of all of the academies, you got the best player, who gets the pick? Is it the guy that finishes bottom in the Premiership or the guy that finishes bottom in the Championship? Or the guys that finishes bottom in Div 1 or Div 2? And because of the pyramid system, it doesn't work.
It will never work in that respect. But I just wonder in terms of the relegation side of it, though, rather than just the draft side of it, have they got something right or have we got it right?
Well, I think if you speak to every single team in the Premiership at the moment and said, oh, yeah, there's no relegation now, I think every single team in the Premiership would go, absolutely, hey, man, we've got it right, brother. I think every single team in the Championship will go, no, absolutely not. We want promotion to it. And I think as soon as that financial implication comes into play, it's hard, isn't it? Because there's no second tier in NFL. You've got your collegiate system and you've got your university system and then you've got the NFL and that's it. That's what happens. Your university prospects go to the draft and they present themselves to the NFL and the NFL teams just pick the best. And that won't work in soccer because who picks? Who gets the first pick? Dude, if there's a draft in football, who gets the first pick?
If you set aside the picking and the drafting and you just looked at it as locked leagues, and let's just say that was the four professional leagues for start with, one of the benefits may be that actually Championship teams in the main, but probably lower down, they spend the money and overstretch themselves so that they can get promoted to the next level. If you take that away from them, they're locked in the league, that they're spending to finish the top of that league. So they're much more likely to be more moderate in their spending. The football, it will be much at a level of playing field. So the matches are probably going to be better. They're going to be more entertaining. So it actually could have quite a lot of benefits, but it's so ingrained in our history that that's how it works. It's quite hard to imagine it being taken away.
And I don't see it. I can't ever envisage a situation where we don't have promotion or relegation. It's just the absolute bedrock of football. It's just teams like, I'll say, the Town, Leek, Sandbach, all the local teams that we've got around here, they strive to be better. And you get promotion, you get promotion, you get promotion. And then you get to the first round of the FA Cup and the second round. So, and all of a sudden, that's what you strive for. And you want to be, no, it doesn't work in America because it doesn't happen.
But the thing is, and this is where it's different in America. We know that the American football game, the NFL, hugely driven by finances. But there is a relative equality between, don't get me wrong, it's not an exact one, but there's a relative equality between those 32 teams that play. You look at the 20 teams that play in the Premier League, it's not there. You look at the likes of Man City and the wealth that they have, that in terms of anything financially, and we know, regardless of what the fair play rules are, ain't there. But then you look at the likes, you go further down, the likes of the Preston North Ends, the Forest Greens, they're never going to be able to compete on that level. Money has far too much influence in the English soccer game.
You say that, though, dude. And you're right, and you say that. However, in the English pyramid system, there's, I'm going to guess, I don't know, 92 professional football teams.
90 something, isn't it? Yeah, it's
right. 90, about that, whatever it may be. How many NFL franchises? 32. So all of a sudden, let's say you take the Premiership and the Championship. So there's 20 in the Premiership, there's 22 in the Championship, so 42. You know, okay, is that the equivalent of the NFL? I don't know, but you haven't got anything that sits under that. So all the money goes to those 32 clubs, and they obviously self-generate. All the TV rights go to those 32 clubs. They probably get, and I don't know, because I don't know what the TV deal is, but they probably get an equal amount of TV money. You're not telling me Forest Green Ravens get the same amount of TV money as Man City do. Come on.
That's my point.
Seriously.
That's my point. Yeah. That's the problem.
So have we got too many professional clubs then?
I'm not saying we've got too many. I'm just saying the way it's set up finance has too much of an impact. Of course, Man City, of course, Arsenal, Liverpool, Everton, those perceived big clubs, Man United, are always going to get, those are the games that they have the most fans that most people want to watch. The way American sports set up is entirely differently. Those 32 teams, they can only spend a certain amount of capital on paying for those players. So they can't afford to spend like £450,000 a week on a player like Forest, you know, like Forest Green never could do that. Man City, that's nothing to them.
It's a slightly different, it's a different question and potentially a whole different podcast. And I'm happy to open the question now that maybe we could go on to the next podcast. Should there be a salary cap? Because, you know, it seems to work in America, and the Bears are traded and not traded, and we've opened up a massive, massive gap in our salary. So next year, we can trade for this, we can trade for that guy, we can trade for that guy. So should there be a salary cap? And if there is, would that make a difference? All of a sudden, Man City can only have two or three marquee players, and then they have to promote from within. They have to go and find X, Y, and Z. I don't know. Completely different podcast. It wasn't what I was going to talk about.
No. I apologize for getting a bit distracted there, but it just sort of kind of bugs me that the clubs that seem to stay around the top, I know it's no coincidence, are the richest clubs. The richest clubs are there at the top. And all of a sudden, Newcastle have been nowhere for years. They have a financial windfall in terms of their owners, the new owners that they have. Well, guess what? They're way up there as well. So it's less about sport and more about money. That's what I don't like.
Yeah.
But that's ironic, me saying that as an Arsenal fan.
I think we have talked about the salary cap in the past, and I think the problem would fall down because you'd need the whole world to abide by it. But
yeah,
let's just assume, for example, that the rest of the world said no. Does that mean we shouldn't have one in England? So you might not get the best players in the world playing for your teams, but does that mean you're actually going to have better football matches, more entertaining football matches, more talent coming through? Is it going to be better overall, even if you don't have, you know, a relatively small percentage of the world's best players in the whole league? I mean, you're not talking just the top five or six premierships, we're talking 90 teams.
Did you look at Man City? All their fans came out of the frigging woodwork as soon as they started buying people. How many Man City fans did you know before that? How many do you know now? Do you know what I mean? The second they start bringing in superstars, oh, my Man City fan. Yeah, well done. Well done. But yeah, I don't think it works. It just wouldn't work because
I just don't think the football model works. Salary caps and this and that and the other. Anyway, I'm just curious. You know, we're obviously pretty passionate about football and we love football and stuff, and I could talk about football all day. But going back to, is there a managerial bounce? Is there one? Is it real? Yes, statistically you get 7.3 points out of 18, is that enough? If you were at the bottom of the league, is that enough to I don't know. And now there is a comparison between, and I think Harry Redknapp did quite well on this, there's a comparison between, so the manager that got sacked, his last six games, and the incoming manager, and his first six games, and what the difference is. So who do you know? What would be the biggest difference in terms of, so the previous manager gets sacked, what was his previous six games, and what was the new manager's six games? If you took 18 points and 18 points, what's the biggest disparity between them? Do you know?
I would guess it might have occurred at Spurs when Tim Sherwood took over and got all those points from the previous guy who probably got none because he was a bag of shit.
Close, but not right.
I'll go for 14 if you're after a number.
Dave, 14. Absolutely spot on.
Certified badass.
Do you know what it is, by the way? Because this should be like, fair play to you, unless you've been doing some research on the fly.
I haven't been doing any research. And do I know who it is? I have absolutely no idea. Big Sam.
Ooh,
Steve Bruce.
No.
Steve Bruce.
No. Sam's in there, but not top. So the top guy was actually John Gregory when he took over from Aston Villa. And in the previous six games, his predecessor got 1 point. So basically five losses and a draw. When he took over, he got 15 points in his first six games. So basically won five out of his first six. And therefore the difference is 14. And he's the one that's shown the biggest bounce. But looking at the stats, you've got John Gregory, Glenn Rhoda at Newcastle, Harry Redknapp at Spurs, Darren Moore at West Brom. Now, Darren Moore, by the way, needs an honourable mention because the predecessor in his previous six games got 0 points. So literally went lost. Darren Moore got 11. So he's gone like, what, win, draw. I mean, that's fair. That's fair play, that is.
Do you have the stats for the opposite, where they've come in and got less points than the previous six games?
That's interesting.
You know what? I'm just having a look now. So, Arsene Wenger. Sorry, Ad. When he was appointed, the guy previous to him got 14 points in his previous six games. Arsene Wenger, when he came in, got 11. So he's on a minus 3 points difference in his first six games.
So who was before Wenger and why? Was he sacked or did he just leave? That doesn't seem sacking material.
Well, the guy before Wenger, well, Pat Rice was the guy who was manager before Wenger in terms of he did it on a short-term
basis. Yeah.
Prior to that, the guy before him was a full-time manager, was Bruce Rioch.
Okay. So Brian Robson, when he took over at West Brom, I'm just looking at the table now, Dave. So previous points was five. So the guy that, so previous points were five and he got one. So Brian Robson, when he took over, basically drew one and lost five in his first six games.
The interesting thing there, though, so Bruce Rioch in his last season, let's just say it was in a reference to Bruce Rioch. So he finished 11th when he was managing Arsenal. Wenger came in partway through that next series after Stuart Houston left. And Pat Rice took over for a brief spell. And in that first season, he finished second and then won the Premier League in his first full season. So whereas there is a disparity there between the points scored, it's not necessarily an accurate one because actually Wenger went on to he was the greatest manager we've ever had.
Yeah, and there's a, you know, I'm sure there's ongoing research in terms of the longevity. Well, you look at, you know, The greatest example of this is Alex Ferguson at Man United.
Yeah.
And if you listen to it and you go back to the stats and you go back to the commentators, and he played, it's now in the EFL, but it used to be like Rumblow's Cup or whatever it used to be, Milk Cup game or whatever. And it was like on a Tuesday night away at wherever.
It's Forest. Was it Forest? Nottingham Forest?
It could be. And he basically won that game. And he won 1-0, 2-1, whatever it was. And they reckon if he'd have lost that game, he'd have been sacked. So if he'd have lost that game, that one game, he'd have been sacked. They won it, so that meant he got a stay of execution till the weekend, and he won the game at the weekend. And then I think he might have gone on and won like the weekend after. So they think, right, we're going to stick with him. And obviously then he built a massive dynasty. They won however many Premier League, Champions Leagues and this, that and the other. So that's the, you know, that's the story about Alex Ferguson is, you know, stick with him and longevity and stuff. But so conclusion really, I suppose, is if you change your manager midway through the season, statistically, you're guaranteed 7.3 points over your first six games, your manager has probably got a 34% chance of winning his first game in charge, but he's also got a 39% chance of losing his first game in charge. So you pay your money, take your chance, don't you? Do you know what I mean?
What was that film? What was that film about an NFL manager? But he basically came in and he revolutionised using stats and data for the plays and everything they did. I think it was NFL. And he was a real person and he came in and he basically, he was a statistician, or he used a statistician to look at all the plays across all the games, and he basically went on the pure stats and said, in this situation, if we're X number of yards out, we do this. If we're X number of yards, we do this. Yeah. And he just did that. And it turned out to be really successful. And it just revolutionized the way they looked at the sport. And it comes back to a board. You know, you do wonder whether they have these stats in front of them. And so, yeah, look, it doesn't matter what we do. You know, as long as we don't pick a complete idiot, there's a chance that, you know, the stats say, because it happens time and time and time again, that we've got six games to go in the season. 6 points will see us safe. Change the manager and he's more likely to do it than an existing manager. Just stats tell us that.
However, though, and I'm just going to, because part of my research was, when should you change? And that goes back to a question that I was talking about. Which month? So my stats are based on nothing pre-season and nothing in the last month of the season. So basically you don't talk about April, May, June, July, August. So you're talking like a month into the season. When's the best month for you to reappoint? Do you know?
October.
Have you done your research, Ad?
I have not.
So October.
I was going to say October as well.
Give me another tick. There we go. So basically, we spoke about the 7.3 average points. So if you go in September, 7.1, October, 8.1. So that basically means you get two wins and two draws in terms of that month. And this is all based on the 149 managers that have been in this survey sort of thing. November 7.3, December 7.6, January 7.0. Now, this is interesting. February 6.8, March 6.7, April 6.7. So basically, they say if you change after Christmas, statistically, your chance of getting more points is reduced. Because the average is 7.3, and if you go January, February, March, you're looking at six, you only look at two wins as opposed to two wins and a draw. Now, that it doesn't sound a lot, it's only that 1 point, but you think over the course of however many games you play, that 1 point could be like huge.
See, my thinking with that actually was nothing based on any of that kind of logic. I just felt like August, September, probably a little bit too soon, October time. They've got the most time to actually make a long-term impact.
And that's why when I was looking at stats, they said we didn't take into account anybody that was effectively new into position pre-September, because they said actually it was always from October, November, December, January, if that makes sense. So it's too early to make a difference or too late to make a difference. So they basically took the middle 6 or 7 months of the season. But October was the one that seemed to be, you get eight, so you get two wins and two draws, which is weird because it's literally 1 point more than the average, but that 1 point would be significant for a vast majority of teams. You know what I mean?
That is the average, though, and the way averages work mean that, you know, some would have got one or two and some would have got 10 or 11, so... But it shifts the needle on it all. And it, as Ad says, it's early. So it has the double benefit of the damage hasn't been done so much. But also, I guess the players are thinking, you know what? We can still do really well this season. There's loads of time. So I'm sure it affects their mindset if you go early as well.
Yeah. And I'm sure if you think, you know, you get to February, March and you change the manager, like, well, what's the point now? We're too late now. And it does go back to... When I was doing my research, the statistics didn't drill down that much in terms of what would be the bounds per club per month. So if you're a big club, does that make a difference when you change your manager? Or if you're a smaller club, if that makes a difference when you change your manager? What it did do, though, it did tell me the average bounds per club, and I'm just gonna read it out now so I could. Which club do you think gets, on average, the most bounce in terms of a new manager? So if you included every managerial change, So I know Liverpool make three or four managerial changes, Chelsea make three or four, Spurs make three or four. Which club gets, on average, the most bounce per new manager? Do you know that? Out of the Premiership.
Tottenham.
Close, Dave.
I'll go Crystal Palace.
It's actually, and it pains me to say, it's actually Liverpool. They get an average of 11.5 bounce points. So 11.5 out of 18. And then you got Chelsea at 10, Spurs, Dave. So Tottenham were third. What did you say, Ant? Crystal Palace?
Yeah.
Nah, rubbish.
I wasn't factoring in VAR, otherwise I'd have obviously gone Liverpool.
Well, obviously, yeah, Liverpool, yeah. So since 2000, so in the last 20 years, which Premiership team has had the most managerial changes?
Yeah, I know Chelsea had like 20.
Okay.
But I think Palace have had like 26.
Okay. Dave, any ideas?
Southampton.
Okay. Ad, you've definitely been doing some research because it's Palace.
I did research that.
You did do some research, of course. Go on, what was the number? Come on, you've definitely
done some research. It was 26. Palace have had 26 managers since the Premier League started, okay? Arsenal have had 26 managers since the club started in 1886.
Yeah.
Bit of a difference.
Obviously, I'd give the stat. You might have looked at the same website. I don't know. But yeah, so Palace, was it 26 managers in 23, in however many years, like 25 years, whatever it is?
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's like, that's like one a year. And when you think, you know, maybe Roy Hodgson was there for like a couple of years, you're thinking, Jesus, there's some people that have lasted like 5-6 months.
Yeah.
So there'd be some people that started in September, they got sacked at Christmas. And then there'd be somebody that was employed at Christmas that didn't even make it through to the end of the year. And you're just like, wow, seriously? How does that even work? Financially, and I suppose I struggle with this. A manager signs a 3-year contract on X millions of pounds. He gets sacked after a year. You've got to pay him off.
Yeah, you do.
Just do your due diligence, get the right guy in place, and that means you don't have to sack him, which saves however many millions of pounds in the long run, doesn't it? I don't know.
Well, that's it. And I think, and when you, the interesting one is when you come to replace like really long-term successful managers like Man United when they replace Alex Ferguson
and Wenger.
Yeah.
Ferguson and Wenger. They're the two massive examples of that, aren't they?
Yeah, Emery didn't really, I don't know, there's an argument that say he didn't really get a fair crack of the whip. And there's probably plenty to say that Moyes didn't at United either.
Yeah, maybe, possibly, but you're almost going to hide into nothing. You almost have to write off the next 3 seasons in terms of, you know, I think whoever went in after Wenger, whoever went in after Ferguson is literally hiding to nothing. And you probably know you're going to be sacked within a year. So it's weird. Dave, in terms of tennis players, athletes, individual sports, they have coaches. So you look at someone like Andy Murray, he has a coach, he has a physio and all that. He doesn't get rid of his guy every 5 or 6 months, does he? He keeps him. You know, golfers with caddies, they don't get rid of their caddy every year.
I don't know. I think Murray's got a bit of a track record, hasn't he?
Just recently, he doesn't go through one a year or two a year,
does he?
Well, he did, didn't he? Because he had, what's his name? Ivan Lendl.
Ivan Lendl.
And then he got rid of him. Then he tried a couple more. And then he had another. But I think that's different because that's, I would imagine that's a personal relationship. It's a lot more than a coach of a club where you've got, you know, 28 first team players and then first team, second team, and all that. It's a one-on-one relationship, and I think that's quite a different ball game. But equally, if it's not, you know, the conclusion, it comes to the end, doesn't it? It's not working out. I'm not winning or feeling I'm successful, and I'm going to say it's because of you. So even at that the nuts and bolts of it is the same, isn't it? The breakup is for the same reason. It's not working out, and which is normally not working out in the measurement of success.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we love football. I'm massively hopeful Sean Dyche will turn us around. As I say, he's 1-2, lost one in his first three games, so he's 6 points. So he only needs a draw in his next three games, and then all of a sudden he's got the average bounce. And they talk about that managerial bounce when we beat Arsenal. You know, so great result. Lose to Liverpool, and then we beat whoever we beat, 1-0, I can't remember who it was. But that's 7 points or 6 points or one more is and that's your bound. So
you haven't got Arsenal again, have you? Because they're on a bit of a slide.
I seem to recall was having a rather comfortable 4-2 win on the weekend away.
It's a mini bounce.
It's only Villa, though, isn't it? So, you know, Arsenal
are going to win them.
Arsenal are about to jump off a cliff, aren't they? City going to win the Premiership, aren't they?
I feared that was the way it was going until we won on the weekend and City drew away at bloody Forest.
But did you see the stats of that game anyway? That's horrendous because, like, how City didn't win that game, I genuinely don't know. But there we go. So, all right, sounds apparent. Well, I suppose. I just want to sum up, you know, in my opinion, and I'll give you two guys your sort of Springer final thoughts in a minute. But I suppose for me, it's I genuinely think that not a manager transfer window, but I think it would be great for football if you end up having to finish the season with the coach or manager that you start the season with. I think it gives them time. I think the fans give time and all of that sort of thing. So, Dave, I don't know what you want to say on it, but that's my thoughts.
I like it, dude. I like it. It wasn't necessarily the way I thought this episode would go, but I really like that idea. I've never heard it knocked around anywhere else, but I think it's a really, really good idea. I would like to see something like that implemented.
Yeah, me too. I think it's got a lot of pros to it. And if you can just overcome the difficulties of implementing it in a way that's set straightforward rules that are black and white, that, you know, can't be manipulated, like the financial fair play and all that sort of stuff, then I think it'd be great. I think we should start a movement to get it in place.
Amen to that. I think it's something that we need to think about. And I agree with, you know, that there's a transfer window, and I agree that players should be able to move and this and that. And I agree the manager should be able to move, but I do think that, you know, halfway through the season, I think if a club is willing to put their faith in a manager, I think they should be held to task for that and maybe stick with that guy until the end of the season. And almost it is what it is, and you dealt the cards that you dealt, and if you've done your due diligence, you've got the right guy in, then you've got nothing to worry about. And if you haven't, then is that reflecting on you as opposed to manager? But yeah, I think that's where I am, and I hope that if Sean Dyche continues to get points for us and we continue to climb the table, and maybe we finish fourth from bottom as opposed to third from bottom, that would be fantastic. And Dave, I don't know any final thoughts just before we move over to our sponsors. I don't know if there's anything you want to say.
I want to throw down a challenge, dude. If we can get the cover off the beers that we've been drinking.
Okay, go on then.
I want to throw down a challenge. So I've had three different beers tonight. So I've had the Tailgate Peanut Butter Milk Stout. Not too bad, that one. Yeah, not too bad. Then I've had this one. Yeah, no, it was all right. It wasn't brilliant. And then I've had this one, which is a Brains Barry Island IPA. Picked it because it's Barry Island. And obviously the Welsh streaking me wanted to drink something like that. And then finally, this is where the challenge lies down. So we've had beers that cost 30 plus quid. This beer is a Weedman Radler, and it cost me 39p. See if you can get a cheaper beer on Tallboy Radio than 39p. And I'm going to be honest, best one of the three I've had tonight.
Dave?
Where are you getting that from? I'm on the alcohol-free, so I've got the BrewDog Punk IPA, but the alcohol-free version, and also these little left 0%, which is actually really good.
See, so I've gone Northern Monk Daily Consider. Have you tried that one as well?
Yeah, it's a good one, that one.
Yeah, I've beaten that. So that's 7% DDH. And then I've also gone for a Chimmy? How do you say it?
Chimmy!
Yeah. And I do like that beer. So, I think all of that is left for me to say is thank you to our sponsors. if you want to head over to ollies-ollies.com, all your pretzel nuts, chocolate flavored pretzels and savories. Use the code TALLBOYRADIO, all capital, all one word, for a 20% discount. And they will donate one free meal for every one brings two. So that brings me to the end of this episode. Adam and Dave, Springer's final thought?
I've really enjoyed this episode, dude. I really, really have. First of all, it's quite nice not to have to sort of chair it and lead it. It's nice to be able to chuck forward my thoughts more often than I normally do. So yeah, I've really, really enjoyed it. I think we touched an interesting subject. Everybody out there loves a little bit of sport, whether it is NFL or it is soccer. So I'm looking forward to hearing any messages that people want to send to us. And if they want to, they can send it to at Tallboy Radio on Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube, at Tallboy Radio Podcast on Instagram. And obviously head over to tallboyradio.com. And if you'd like, drop us an email at mail@tallboyradio.com and let us know what you thought about this and any other episode that you may have listened to.
Dave?
I do like stats. And I would really love to know from someone who's been in the boardroom making these decisions whether they've looked at these stats and that, and they've looked at the bounce factor in a purely statistical way and said, you know what, we're doing it on that reason only.
Yeah. Absolutely, mate. And it'd be interesting, do you go on the human factor or do you go on the statistical factor? And as Dave said, I'd love to be in a position where somebody would sort of give us the answer or at least their insight into that. So if there is anybody in that position, look, hit us up, in all the places that Adam's just mentioned, and we'd love to hear from you. But until the next time, Gaz in the driving seat, it's Gaz out. Tallboy Radio out. See you later, guys.